Good morning, Nisim.
Good morning, Sam. How are you? This is really a pleasure to see you here. Yeah. You know, beautiful day outside, the sun.
Thank you.
Thank
you very much.
We are ready to hear Dvar Torah, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we will see, we'll hear you. No, Dvar Torah. Thank you.
Thank you, Nisim, for this privilege and pleasure, as usual. It's been about 3 years now that you've given me this opportunity to address the beautiful and gorgeous and precious Jewish listeners out there, and to impart upon all these, my beautiful Jewish comrades and brothers and sisters, some Divrei Torah that I've heard and read and learned from the great Tzaddik, Harav Avigdor Miller, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So we are embarking on another trip today through the Sefer Bereshit. Bereshit, Bara Elokim et Hashemayim et Haaretz. And Sefer Bereshit, as we've been saying, is Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. We're learning the great Derech Eretz from the Abot and the Imahot, from our great fathers and mothers, the progenitors of our great nation. And we know Bereshit, Bishpil Reshit. Bishpil Reshit, that Hashem created the world for, Bishpil Torah Shekre Reshit, Bishpil Yisrael Shekre Reshit. For the Torah and for the Jewish people, in order that they bring down the Torah, learn Torah, live Torah, and disseminate Torah to their children. Just like Abraham Abinu did. That's why Hashem loved Abraham, because he knew he would disseminate the Torah to the next generation. So over here we are living through the Parashat HaShavua as we normally do. We have to know the Parashat HaShavua, like we usually say, is what Hashem is thinking. The Torah is the thoughts of Hashem. It's the mind of Hashem that he's thinking, and we have the opportunity to think like Hashem. That first time you hear that, it throws you for a loop, that we could think like Hashem? The answer is yes, you can think like Hashem by just thinking. Any pasuk in the Torah is what Hashem is thinking. Right now, Hashem is thinking about Yitzhak and Rivka, and also Yaakov. He's thinking all these thoughts. And when we study the Torah, Parashat Toledot, we'll also be thinking like Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, of course, our great job in this world is to work on Emunah, Bitachon, and Yirat Shamayim. To gain Emunah, Bitachon, and fear and awareness of Hashem. That's the purpose of life. And we're learning these great fundamental purposes today through Yitzhak and Rivka. We already learned some through Abraham Avinu, certainly. And we're going to learn some also from Yaakov Avinu and the rest of the greats. But today we're concentrating on our parasha, Emunah, Bitachon, and Yirat Shamayim. And we have to know, one of the great Nevi'im came on later, Habakkuk v'hemidam alachat. Habakkuk said, took the whole Torah and he boiled it down, and he boiled it down to one principle. And that principle was Sadiq be'emunato yichyeh. Sadiq lives with his emunah. Emunah means to make Hashem's existence real. Not to make it just a name in the Siddur. Hashem shouldn't just be a name in the Siddur. Hashem should be, you should be able to see him, basically. Be aware of Hashem in all of the manifestations of his creation, certainly, and his Torah. And all, so make Hashem, chokhmah binah v'da'at. Da'at means sensory perception. To have a sensory perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we're working towards in life. That Hashem runs the world. We have to know Hashem is running everything. So when we see anything happening in the world, we have to know Hashem brought it to the world. Hashem is running the world. So we saw this weekend a terrible massacre in France. Terrible massacre. Almost 150 people were massacred, and another couple of hundred were severely injured. We have to see that. We have to notice it. We don't just let it pass you by. Why do you have to notice it? Because we have to know who brought it. Hashem runs the world. Hashem brought that. Why, who, where? We can't know all the depth of Hashem's thinking, why he brought it, to his retributions and all kinds of things, why he brought it and who he brought it. We can't. But we have to certainly not lose the opportunity to gain some lesson, the lesson of Hazal, and Hazal will tell us, Ela Bishbi Yisrael, that anything that happens in this world, whether a ship goes from Galia to España, or there's an unaccounted tsunami in the world, or tragedy, or something that happened in Alaska, or the Himalayas, that's not even affecting the Jewish people. But we have to know that all these things are in order for us to take notice, and to gain some Yirat Shamayim, as we say, and to make Teshuvah. We have to at least do that. We can't just say, pass the ketchup, please, that it's, after all these people are being massacred, all these humans, and maybe some Yehudim were killed also. I don't know. Hopefully not. So we have to gain that awareness, and this is in order for us to make a teshubah, an improvement in our lives. Otherwise, it was all a waste, Hashem. I made all this thing for a waste. If you Yehudim didn't gain lessons from what I'm doing, it's a waste. Like when Hashem drowned the Egyptians in the Yam Suf, it was in order for the Jewish people should sing and praise Hashem, as Yashir Moshe. Sing, praise Hashem. See, that is Yesh Din v'Yesh Dayan. These Egyptians were murderers. They were killers. They killed a lot of Yehudim. And when they saw that Hashem took retribution on them, the Jewish people saw and gained in the Yerat Shamayim, they saw it in Munach Hushit. And they gained it in Munach Hushit. That's the least we have to do when we see these things in the world. Can't just say, I don't know, why did it happen? I don't know. No, you got to say, Hashem did it. Hashem brought it. And soon Hashem is going to bring Hanukkah. And then he's going to bring also Purim. He's going to bring Haman. And he's going to bring Mordechai and Esther to kill Haman. He's going to bring the Yevanim. And he's going to bring the Hashmonaim to take care of the Yevanim. We have to notice that. When we notice that he brought the Yevanim, then he brings the Hashmonaim. But if we don't know why he brought the Yevanim, how are we going to, he's not going to feel justified in bringing the Hashmonaim. So that's our job in this world, to realize and be aware that Hashem is running everything in this world. Now, this past week, we had a Rosh Chodesh Kislev. It's Chodesh Kislev. Kislev is Kavhe Kislev. It's the holiday of Hanukkah, the holiday of the miracles. And Rosh Chodesh, we have to take that opportunity to be renewed. It's a Hadash. Chodesh means new. And on Rosh Chodesh, every Rosh Chodesh, we have to learn to revisit and re-examine the Berachot that we received last month. That's incumbent upon us. And you should get that habit. We have 12 Rosh Chodeshes every year. So Rabbi Miller used to teach us every Rosh Chodesh to think about these three thoughts. And I always think about these three thoughts, and I'd like to share them with you, as I usually do on Rosh Chodesh. Although Rosh Chodesh was, this past week, Thursday, Friday, it's never too late. Never too late to learn. So on Rosh Chodesh, we spend some time meditating and thinking about at least some of the berachot that Hashem has given us this past month, and we thank Him for it. That's the idea. The idea is to thank Him. That's hakarat hatov. To realize what you got, and to realize how good it is, and thank Him. And you have to know that we owe Hashem. It's not for free. We're in debt. Nothing's for free. We have to owe Hashem. We owe Hashem to learn His Torah, to do His mitzvot. We owe Hashem. But at least we have to notice we're getting it and thanking Him for it. That's called hakarat hatov, recognizing the good. We have to recognize that we got. So we think about that, all the life, the food, the eyesight, walking, thinking, the family, Torah. We have a free country. We're breathing. We're hearing. Think how good they are and thank Hashem for them. That's called hakarat hatov. Now we say the next step of Rosh Chodesh is to ask Hashem. Ask Hashem for everything for next month. First, you thank Him for last month, and now ask Him for everything and more for next month, because the more you're asking for, don't be shy. The more you're asking for, the more you're showing yourself that He's the Kol Yachol. He's the one that could do everything for you. He has no limit to what He can give you. So ask Him for everything you can. Don't be shy. Don't think it's not nice, it's not right. No, it's nice and it's right and it's best that you should ask Hashem for anything you could think of, all of your heart's desires, ask Hashem for, and that shows you that He can give it to you. Now the third thing we do on Rosh Chodesh is that we try to improve on something good that we're already doing. Like we say it in Musav, Zeman Kapara. It's also a time for forgiveness and Teshuvah. So Teshuvah, what does it mean Teshuvah? Teshuvah means improvement. So we're looking to improve on something that we're already doing pretty good, and we want to do it a little bit better. That's called Teshuvah. So now, our parasha is full of lessons, full. And Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. We're learning lessons of Derech Eretz, as I've been learning in Sefer Bereshit. Derech Eretz means good character traits. We're learning that because in order to be ready and prepared to accept the Torah on Har Sinai in Sefer Shemot, after we get out of Mitzrayim, we have to have character traits, in order to have a vessel for which to put the Torah inside of it. Without a vessel, it's like a hole in the pocket. If you have a hole in your pocket, you can't put money in your pocket. You keep putting money in your pocket, it falls out of the hole. So we have to have a good vessel. That vessel is Midot Tovot. That vessel is good character. And we say, Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. Otherwise, it's like putting, if you don't have the good character, you'll be putting all that Torah in a head with a hole in it. If you have a head with a hole in it, it's going to keep falling out of the hole. What good is that? It's a waste of effort, a waste of energy. So we have to make sure we are now creating a cistern, a good place to put all the beautiful Torah that we're going to be putting in our head and our neshama, because all the Torah we put in is going to be skewed. It's going to be viewed through the perfection of our midot. So over here we see from Yitzhak Avinu, he went out into the field and to speak in the time of evening. The words lasuach pasadeh. He spoke in all of his wonders. He spoke in all of the wonders, as we see in the Ashrei, and I shall speak asiach in all nifleotav, in all of your wonders shall I speak. I'll speak in your word. I shall speak in your commandments. So we see that we can gain closeness to Hashem by seeing all the wonders that He's doing in creation. Meditative speech concerning Hashem's God wonders in creation and of history, and concerning His commandments and pronouncements. This was the practice which Yitzhak had learned from his father Abraham, who spoke always about these matters. The Abot grew great by means of such discourses. The late afternoon was a suitable time for such meditation and discourse. Had this been an unimportant occasion, the Torah would not have wasted words to speak in the field. Yitzhak had willingly gone to offer his life to Hashem. So we understand that his life was dedicated to Hashem's service. The study and teaching of Hashem's wonders is certainly one of the chief forms of service of Hashem. So study, stop today. Study the cloak up in the sky. Study the clouds. Where are those clouds coming from? And look how they're moving. Look how they're blowing. The clouds don't stand still. Look at them. They keep moving across the canvas of the sky. The sky is a canvas. It's a canvas. It's a picture. It's a beautiful painting that keeps on changing. Hashem is changing it for your benefit. He wants you to notice that He's changing it. And those clouds are moving. Why are they moving? Because they're moving their conveyor belts. They're conveying the pure water vapor that's been evaporated from the ocean, the briny ocean. The brine has been distilled from the waters of the ocean by the power of the sun. The sun is so powerful, from 93 million miles away, it's beating down on the ocean. And it is distilling the ocean from its brine, from its salt, from the junk in there, and it's bringing up pure water vapor. And it's going up and forming clouds. But those clouds wouldn't do anybody any good if they stayed over the ocean. If it rained for the fish, it's not going to do the fish any good. So we see that the clouds are moving for your benefit. So you have to notice that. And what's moving over, moving the clouds? The wind. Mashiv haruach umid geshem. The clouds are moving the wind in order for you to see that they're moving the wind. But you have to notice that. Very important. That's noticing. Sichu bechol nifleotav. Speak in all of his wonders. Then if you do that, you'll be emulating our great father, Yitzhak Avinu, that was always talking in the wonders of Hashem. Now, there's no end to this practice. And this is very, very fundamental in gaining an awareness of Hashem. And this is what is the purpose of our life, Yirat Shamayim, to gain an awareness of Hashem. Now, Yitzhak made even more progress than his father Abraham in these studies. And we're quoting from the Shemot Rabbah, this is in the Midrash, quote, Israel will go out to Abraham and say, teach Torah to us. And he will say, Israel will go say, that's Yaakov will say, go to Yitzhak, who learned more than I. Yitzhak received all of the father's teachings and added to them and lived longer and was able to progress further in his studies. Thus, this verse, Yitzhak went out to speak in the field, was not a one-time event, but it was his regular practice throughout his lifetime. Now, in our parasha, Yitzhak and Rivka had a problem. And this is, again, this is Derech Eretz. Hashem is showing us how we should act when we have problems. They had a problem. For 20 years, they couldn't have any children. And what do they go and do? This is our model. They pray, and they pray, and they pray more and more. And Hashem mitaveh itfalatam shel tzadikim. The question is, why did Hashem bring them such a problem? Because Hashem is desirous of the tefillah, of the prayer of tzadikim. The question is, why? Why is Hashem desirous of the prayer of tzadikim? Is Hashem mean? Does He want to cause the tzaddik to suffer for such a long time, not have children? Abraham and Sarah didn't have children for so many years, and Yitzhak and Rivka also suffering, we see throughout the ages? No. So what is the purpose of Hashem bringing this vicissitude onto the tzaddik? Because Hashem is desirous of the prayer of tzaddikim. Why? Why is that? What's the depth of that? So Hashem is sending them problems. Now, of course, Hashem doesn't need anything. And certainly He doesn't wish that the tzaddik should suffer. He doesn't need their prayer. But Hashem is like their father. It's like a father with a child. When the father sees the child come home with a report card full of A's, he knows the child is progressing in life. He's doing good. And that brings happiness. It brings pleasure to the father. So Hashem when a person is praying hard with his whole heart to Hashem, it shows that this person is reaching perfection. The perfection is to gain awareness of Hashem. That's perfection. Yirat Hashem is the purpose of life. Reshit Chochma Yirat Hashem. Beginning of wisdom is the Yirat Hashem. So Hashem sees, when Hashem sees that a person is gaining Yirat Shemayim, awareness of Hashem, then Hashem is very happy because this person is increasing in his perfection. And so these problems that Hashem is bringing is in order to bring, it's a test for a person. It's an assistance for a test, means to raise the person, to bring him closer to Hashem in his perfection for Hashem in Yirat Shemayim. Now the babies, causing Ribka, a terrible pain. So we're learning a derech eretz here. Rivka is in a terrible pain. What should she do? So we see what she does. She goes to the tzaddik. She goes to the rabbi. She goes to the house of Shem Va'eved, to the Navi. And she goes to them and says, I have a big problem here. What should I do? So of course, you know, a lot of people want to ask, how come she didn't go to Yitzhak? How come she didn't go to Abraham Avinu, who was alive at the time? Well, Rav Miller answers in his book, he says, well, it's a very personal thing to have a problem with the pregnancy. And the Ka was Tzanua. She was Tziniut. And she didn't feel she was modest. And she didn't feel it would be proper in her modesty to do that when she had the option to go to another tzaddik, Shem Va'eved, also big prophets. So she gets the prophecy from Shem Va'eved, and it says, "V'rav ya'avod shenei goyim bebitnech." The prophet tells her, "You have two children in your stomach. You are pregnant with twins. Your two children." Now that already settled her mind a little bit, because she thought maybe she had one child, but it was a schizophrenic. That child was a dual personality. Sometimes he wants to go to the shul. Sometimes he wants to go to the yeshiva. Sometimes he wants to go to the opposite, wants to go to the clubs. So though she thought, how am I going to deal with such a child? He's a split action, split personality. When the prophet told her that she has two children, she said, oh, that's easier for me to deal with. If I know I have a certain child that wants to go to yeshiva, we certainly could deal with him and raise him. And we have another child that has all his tendencies that go just to the clubs and to do things that aren't proper. So we'll deal with him too. We'll get him a therapist. So she was told the prophecy, which is a very big prophecy. Ve'rav ya'avod tsa'ir. Rav, the older one, is going to serve the younger one. So already Rivka got the tip off. She knew that Yaakov was the chosen one because he's the tsa'ir, and the Rav is Esav is going to service the younger one. So she knew that all along, and that's why Rivka ohebet et Yaakov. She was a mother. She loved her children, but she had a further love for Yaakov because she knew from the prophet that he was the chosen one, that he was picked from Hashem to be the progenitor of the great nation of Israel. And that's why Rivka did all she could do in order to make sure that Yaakov received the blessings from Yitzhak Avinu, because she knew who Yaakov was. She knew he was the Nivchar. He was the chosen from Hashem, as was related to her from the prophet. Of course, the question remains, why didn't she tell Yitzhak about it? That's a big question. People want to ask that question. Well, if she knew, why didn't she tell her husband about it? And the same question is asked by Yosef. Yosef was estranged from his father. He was kidnapped. He was taken to Mitzrayim and he didn't see his father for 27 years, and his father was in very big pain from that. And Yosef ended up becoming the second to the king in Mitzrayim. But for all those years, he didn't send a letter to his father to tell him that he's fine, that he's in Mitzrayim, don't worry, I'm the king over here, I'm second to the king. So the question is, why didn't Yosef tell his father neither? So the same question is over here by Rivka. Why didn't she tell Yitzhak about this prophecy? And the answer is one answer, that the prophet, first of all, Rivka didn't tell Yitzhak because Yitzhak was a giant, big giant prophet in his own right. And Yaakov Avinu was a prophet, where Yosef wasn't even a prophet. So they both figured if Hashem wanted them to know, Hashem would tell them himself. What are they going to come? What kind of a chutzpah is that for them to come and tell Yaakov or Yitzhak this news, the news that they got a dream or a prophecy? It would show that they're bigger than their fathers, than their husbands. Also, a prophet is given this prophecy in privacy, personal. So they want to live out the prophecy. So Rivka was given this prophecy to live it out, and so was Yosef given this prophecy to live out the prophecy. So over here, we see in our parasha, Ve'rav Ya'avod Sa'ir. And this is also a prophecy that the Rav, the older one, will serve the younger one. It's actually saying when the older one, when the Goy, when the Esav, which is a representative of Bnei Esav, the Goyim, when they serve, when they work along with the younger one, with Yaakov, with the Yehudim, there can be a big beracha in the world. And Rashi brings over here at least one case of such a beracha. And he brings the case of Antoninus, Marcus Aurelius Antoninus, the Roman Caesar, and his relationship with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, one of the greatest men to ever live. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he codified the Mishnah, the Torah Shebaal Peh. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was the Nasi of Israel. He was very, very, very wealthy. And he had Ruach HaKodesh, certainly, that he was able to override a Torah law that you're not allowed to put it down on writing, the Torah Shebaal Peh, but he felt that there's Et Lasot Lashem. It was a very dangerous situation, dangerous time, that the Torah Shebaal Peh was being lost. So he decided to override the Torah law, and he had the power to do it. So what happened over here? Ve'rav Ya'avod Sa'ir, in Gemara Baba Metziah, it relates the wondrous story of how these two leaders got together. Now, they even got together from the time of their mothers got together. It says that at the time, prior to that time, there was a decree in Rome that no Jewish baby is going to have a berit milah. Cannot have a berit milah. If they see a Jewish baby with a berit milah, they'll kill the baby and the mother too. So the parents of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi were going down to Rome, and they had just had this baby. And the baby, Rabbi, they gave him a berit milah. And they stopped in a hotel. And the same time, the mother of Antoninus also had a baby. His name was Marcus Aurelius. And they got friendly. And what happened, actually, the Antoninus baby needed some milk. And the mother of Rabbi gave from her milk to feed Antoninus. And this milk went into his body, went into Antoninus, and transformed him. Now, the mother of Antoninus did a chesed. What did she do? She allowed the babies to be switched, because if Rabbi's parents went to Rome and they looked and they saw berit milah, they would have killed them all. But they switched babies and they went down to Rome with the Antoninus, who didn't have berit milah, and they were saved. Now later on in life, Rabbi went down to Rome he was the leader. He was the Nasi, and he went down to Rome and he met up with this senator. It wasn't the Caesar yet; he was a senator called Marcus Aurelius, and they hit it off. They became very good friends. And Rabbi Miller, as he relates the story, he says that Antoninus fell in love with Rabbi, and later on, Antoninus became the Caesar of Rome. That's the Caesar of Rome. He ruled the whole world, the Caesar of Rome. So Rebbe, when he decided to codify the Mishnah, the Torah Shebaal Peh, he needed to get permission from the Caesar of Rome. And the Caesar of Rome decided to lift the decree and also lift the taxes in the land. And he also financed the writing of the Mishnah. And they became terrific friends. He built a palace next door to the house of Rebbe, and he used to go at night in underground tunnels and go learn Torah with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And eventually, the Gemara tells us that Marcus Aurelius did berit milah on himself, and he converted and became a Jew. This is the greatness of when Rav Ya'avod Sa'ir. That's the prophecy. When the older get together with the younger, that could be a big beracha. Now, when I first met Avigdor Miller in 1984, I had been listening to his tapes for a couple of months in the summertime, and then I just went to, then that was in the summer. Then I came back to Brooklyn, and I figured I wanted to meet this great rabbi. So I went to his house on Ocean Parkway, and I knocked on his door. And he answered the door. But he's the one who answered the door. He said, yes, may I help you? So I introduced myself, and I told him, by the way, I read that book. I read the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. So he opened his eyes wide. He said, you read that book? I said, yeah, you. I thought I said the wrong thing. He said, yeah, I heard on one of your tapes, you said it's okay to read that book. And if you read that book, you're going to see some of the teachings that Marcus Aurelius Antoninus received from Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and that he wrote in that book, such as Olam Haba. He wrote about reward and punishment. He wrote about quite a few things that he learned from Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Of course, he couldn't tell the Romans or anybody that he was friendly with the Jew, and he couldn't certainly tell them that he converted to Judaism. They didn't go for that. They would have knifed him in the back like they did to Julius Caesar. They would have killed him 1, 2, 3. So, but we have to have a Hakarat HaTov for that Roman Caesar, who on his back, we have all the Torah, the Mishnah, and the Gemara that we have today. Torah Sheba'al Peh was because of his partnership with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and allowing the writing and the codifying of these holy Torah Sheba'al Peh, we have it today. So anytime, sometimes when you open the Gemara, you could say once in a while, say, I want to give Hakarat HaTov to Antoninus, Marcus Aurelius Antoninus, the Caesar of Rome. Now, the question over here, everybody wants to know, in our parashiyot over here, of Esav and Yaakov. So, how could Yitzhak make such a mistake? What were the factors that Yitzhak led him to believe that Esav was the chosen son? What factors happened? He was just born. What did Yitzhak see that he felt that Esav was to be the chosen son? So, first of all, keep in mind that we are in this world to be tested. La'amod benisayon. That's the purpose of life. So Hashem is testing. He's always testing. And he's testing Yitzhak right here as well. Now, this was a great test for Yitzhak, because Yitzhak certainly believed in divine providence, that Hashem is running everything in the world. So when he saw the firstborn, when he saw that Esav was born first, he already formulated in his mind that Hashem caused Esav to be born first. So he's the Bechor. So that therefore must be he's the man. Then he saw Esav had a special complexion. It had a ruddy complexion. It had a red complexion about him. And this red complexion also was an indication that he was a go-getter. He was energetic. So again, Yitzhak saw that as a sign from Hashem that this is the man. And Esav was full of hair. He had all kulo ka'aderet se'ar. He was full of hair. And this was very unusual. And also, Yitzhak saw that as another sign that this was the man. This was the chosen one. And also as well, he was asui. He was ready-made. They say he had teeth already. He already looked like a man. He was a little baby, little infant. He was ready-made. Very unusual. And they called him Esav because asui. And this was another indication for Yitzhak that must be Hashem did all of these things for me to know that this is going to be the chosen one. And another thing was, ki sayid b'fiv. Now, sayid b'fiv, it's a little bit later that Esav fed Yitzhak venison. He fed him food, ki sayid b'fiv. He used to go out and hunt deer meat and bring him sayid b'fiv and arrange it and cook it the way that Yitzhak liked it. So Yitzhak had a hakarat tov. He had an inherent midah tovah of hakarat tov, an appreciation and a gratitude for getting this food from Esav. So that also biased him. It biased him towards Esav because he had a natural midah tovah, a good character trait of hakarat tov. And as the Gemara tells us, en hasata ela ba'achila ushtiyah, that the greatest persuasion and pitui, in asata, persuasion is in eating and drinking, and it's bribery too. It's a bribery when you eat it, when you're feeding somebody. You're actually causing them to be bribed by your eating and drinking. So, for example, you want to get a good order from a customer, go take him to lunch, feed him. It'll open up his receptive genes to receive your requests for him to buy your merchandise, right? And if you want to get some positive reaction from your wife, from your spouse, you don't just tell her, I want you to do this, that, that, papa. No, you take her to dinner, take her to a nice dinner, and then ask her whatever you like. At least you open up the, makes her receptive. That's a shohad. That's a bribery of sorts. It's a positive, it's a shohad. So it was these reasons, these are some of the reasons that Yitzhak was being fooled. So, of course, you have to know Esav wasn't as bad as you thought he was. Esav was brought up by Yitzhak and Rivka. Esav was brought up on the lap of Avraham Avinu. Esav should have been greater. He could have been greater. He wasn't as good as he could have been. He wasn't as great as he could have been. So Hashem is judging him on that level. Everybody is judged on their potential. And Esav also was judged on his potential. At the end of the day, Yitzhak realized he was wrong about Esav. And Vayecherad charada gedola ad meod. And he trembled, a very great tremble. So it says he's how much? So of course, how much more must we suspect ourselves of being wrong? We all think we're right all the time. We all think we're very good, and you see, even a gadol hador, the one of the avot like Yitzhak Avinu, he can also be wrong, so to speak, about his son, about Esav. So we have a case over here. Isaac trembled a very great trembling, and Esav cried out a very great, exceedingly bitter cry. So it says, "Vayicherad cherada gedula al meod." Yitzhak was trembling so much. Esav, he also cried out ad meod. He also cried out a terrible, exceedingly bitter cry. So here we have the case where two men were subject to the most awesome alarm. When Yitzhak Abinu realized that he'd been in error for so many years, and Yitzhak trembled a very great trembling. He was a prophet, and surely he knew both his sons well. And yet he was tricked for many years and almost gave the blessings to the wrong son. Yitzhak suddenly understood that he'd committed an error of such magnitude that would have altered the entire history of the great nation, which was expected to rise up and become the people of Hashem. Hazal tell us that he saw Gehinnom open up before him, and he trembled exceedingly. The Midrash tells us that Yitzhak was even greater than Abraham in wisdom, since he possessed his father's wisdom and also had progressed on his own. And still yet, he was fooled by Esav. The same applies to Esav as well, since they both cried out, Sa'ak se'aka gedula al me'od. They also cried out, and Esav also cried out a most exceedingly cry. Since by Isaac Yitzhak this meant that he was completely fooled, then by Esav it also meant that he was completely fooled. Esav thought he was honestly entitled to the blessings. If he had realized that he was inferior to Yaakov, his brother, then even though he might have been disappointed when Yaakov received the blessings, he wouldn't have made such an outcry. But his cry proves that he really thought he deserved the blessings. Thus both Yitzhak and his son Esav cried, one for the many years of error and his almost fatal mistake, Yitzhak, the other for not getting what he thought he deserved, Esav. The rabbi says, in Slabadke Yeshiva, we were constantly taught a person must always examine his motivations. A person must always give himself the benefit of the doubt. A person always gives himself the benefit of the doubt, is biased, and merely acknowledges his faults. Even when he suspects certain flaws in his character, he never has any idea how serious they are. He can only improve if someone else points them out. For example, your father, your mother, your spouse, your boss, your rabbi, or your teacher. A person must be a listener, must be a listener. And it says in our parashat at the end, and Yaakov Shama, he listened to his father and his mother. Yaakov, who sat in the tent, was the one who knew his own faults. Ish tam yoshev ohalim, he listened and obeyed his great parents. So even when you do listen, you have to listen and hear things many times. It takes 40 years before you fully understand its meaning. Mishlei says, the ear that hears the admonitions of life will always abide in the midst of the wise. So Esav, the question by Esav is, how Esav was not a lightweight, as we said before. So how did Esav make such a blunder? How could Esav make such a mistake? How could he sell his future, his birthright for a bag of beans? That's a crazy question. Why would Esav do such a thing? At least he should. If he wanted to sell it for $1 million. Why would he sell it for a bag of beans, for lentil beans? So Rabbi Miller explains like this. He says, well, it says, Vehu Ayef, he was weary. But the truth is, he was hungry. But here, the weariness is emphasized. Also, in the following verse, Esav declares, for I am weary. We discern the importance of this fact in this episode. It was Hashem's plan to cause unusual weariness to Esav on that day. Abraham Abinu had passed away, which is why Yaakov was cooking the lentils. So this was the traditional mourner's meal. When Esav heard the bad news, his mind was pushed off balance, and he became very disheartened. Esav felt that since such a great tzaddik could die, that means that the world was devoid of justice and a judge. For if not for this weariness, this dejection, he was depressed. Esav would not consent to surrender his prized birthright, which carried not only the honor and privilege, but also the opportunity to earn merit in the service of Hashem, which was the prerogative of the Bechor. But in this discouraged mood, many men forget the world to come, and even the glory of status and privilege might be carelessly exchanged for a momentary gratification, which over here was a pot of lentils. It was when Esav was in a discouraged mood that he made his terrible error. So the rabbi concludes over here a very big lesson, a tremendous lesson. He says, discouragement and depression are the most extreme forms of the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. Therefore, we must be careful to stay far away from this state of mind and remove it from ourselves quickly, since it makes ourselves susceptible to the falling of the Yetzer Hara. Now, I heard the rabbi said the following. He said, if a person not feeling good, he's a little bit depressed or discouraged, he should, firstly, what he can do is like this. He used to say, open up the window and take 10 deep breaths of fresh air. Oxygenate your blood, the rabbi would say. He goes, that might be all it might take to bring you out of this feeling. You bring that oxygen into your blood, it could make you feel better. Take nice deep breaths of fresh air. He goes, now, be careful. He says, don't jump out now. Don't jump out of the window, he would say in his wit. Then he'd say, look, if that doesn't work, he goes, take half a glass of wine. No, nothing wrong with v'yayin yisemach levav enosh. We're not telling you to be addicted to wine. Don't be an alcoholic. But take half a glass of wine. That may pick up. That might be what's necessary to kickstart and pick up your spirits. Of course, again, we're not telling a person to get addicted to do that on a regular basis. This is a one-shot deal. Because it's so dangerous to be in a state of depression that you even have to sometimes take an extreme measure to get out of that state of depression. So he would compare it to a person getting the hiccups. He says, you know, a person, when he first gets the hiccups, it's very easy to get rid of the hiccups. You hold your breath, you take a half a glass of water, maybe somebody scares you, whatever the homemade remedies were to get rid of the hiccups. He says, but if you let the hiccups linger, it'll be much, much more difficult to get rid of the hiccups. He told the story, there was a guy in his shul that he didn't get rid of the hiccups right away. He let it go a couple of days. He actually had to go to the hospital to do some kind of a procedure to get rid of his hiccups, believe it or not. So over here, we're learning a very big lesson from Esav, that he was dejected, he was depressed. And when you're in this kind of mood, you have to make sure, yes, you should lay low. Don't make any decisions that day. Don't fight with your wife that day. Don't walk out on your boss that day. Don't walk out on your job that day. You lost your order. Don't walk out on the job that your boss gave you. Maybe reduced your salary. You got depressed. Don't walk out on the job that day. Wait a week. See if you can get another job first. Don't just walk out on the job that day. When you're a little bit dejected, don't make any decisions on a day like that. So the rabbi says, one should refrain from making any decisions when in a mood of weariness or dejection. He says, wait for a more opportune time with a positive frame of mind to formulate your choice. Very big lesson here we're learning from Harav Avigdor Miller. Now, we have to know Esav did many sins. The Chazal tell us he did many sins that day. That day he did a lot of sins. He murdered somebody. He went with a married lady. He was kofir, but a chatichat metim. He did a lot of sins that day, according to the rabbis. Now, but the Torah only cites one sin that he did. They don't write about all the other ones. It says one sin. It says, the Torah testifies, Vayibez et ha-bechora. Vayibez, he despised the bechora. So that means he despised the service of Hashem, and for that sin of despising the service of Hashem, he was not forgiven. That's the worst sin of all of them that he could have made. And that's what Torah is telling us. Now, Esav was his progeny, his nation was called Edom. It wasn't called Esav, they're called Edom. Nation of Edom. So why would they call themselves Edom? Well, they are calling themselves Edom because they're pointing Vayetze Harishon Admoni. They're saying, you know why we're called Edom? Because we really were the firstborn. We came out red, ruddy. And really, we were usurped by Yaakov Abinu. He took away our birthright. And we are really the firstborn. We deserve all of the blessings of Yitzhak, Abraham's blessings. Why? Because we were born Edom. And that's why we're calling ourselves Edom. We're the red men, because we were born first. No, but the Torah, and that's why it says over there by Esav, it says, Ha'iteni na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. He goes, give me that red soup. I want the red soup. Why? Because I was born red. I was born ruddy. I'm firstborn. He's saying red because he's alluding to that he was born first. He was born red. But the Torah is telling us different. It says, very important. Now pay attention. It says, Al Ken. Oh, don't think they were called Edom because he was born first and ruddy. No. Al Ken Karashimo Edom. You know why he's called Edom? Because he sold his birthright down the drain for red soup. Al Ken Karashimo Edom. Because he sold it for red pottage, red lentils. And we learned a beautiful chidush on this on Friday night from Rabbi Yosef Joey Mizrahi. He told us that the Esav was Olam Hazemen. He was very surface oriented. He never looked under the surface. Where Yaakov Ekev, he looked, went all the way down to the heel. He looked at everything down to the end. Where Esav just saw the redness of the top of the soup. He didn't see the lentils under the soup. In fact, even when he went and got the lentil soup, that was the day Abraham Abinu died. But he wasn't too concerned about sitting with the mourners of Abraham Abinu died. He just wanted the soup. It's like a guy go visiting in a Beit Abel, and he goes right to the table that has some food on it, and he's not even concerned with the people sitting on the floor. He doesn't go to commensurate with the people sitting on the floor. He goes to have a bagel for himself from the table. So this is a man that Esav was. He only saw the surface of things. He didn't see the depth. He didn't see the depth of the berachot. He didn't see the depth of being the one that serves in the temple of Hashem, of being the oldest one in the family. He just wanted the red color. He didn't look under the red and see what was below that red. Now, says in our parasha, Esav was Isaid Isadeh. He was a hunter. He was a man of the field. Rashi tells you, we think he's a man of the field. Sounds pretty good. He's a businessman. He goes out. That's what business did they have those days? Hunting. They got animals. They sold animals. He was an active man. No, Rashi tells us, Ish Batel. He was a wasteful man. What does it mean, Ish Sadeh? Don't think he was an energetic guy that doing good things. He was a wasteful guy. He was a man, a Batel. He's a do-nothing man. And we see, like Ishmael, it says, Vahiro ve Kashat. Ishmael was a bow and arrow man, and Esav was an Ish Sadeh. And they were both wasted away their opportunities. And that's why Hashem is so mad at them. And that's why Hashem is so angry at these people. And Hashem holds it against them forever. Ishmael, he wasted it away. He was Elokim Etanah. God was with Ishmael, but he became a bow and arrow man. He should have been Moshe Rabbeinu. God was with him. He should have been like Moshe Rabbeinu. And over here, Esav. Esav was the son of Ruka and Yitzhak, two greatest tzaddikim. He should have been at least Yaakov Abinu. He could have been Yaakov, maybe greater. He was born first. He had big kohot. He had a lot of powers. But he became a bow and arrow. He became a hunter. Can you imagine that? That's what he did. So that's why Hashem is telling us in the Haftarah, very big statement, listen carefully. Hashem is saying, and our Haftarah says, Et Esav Saneti. Ooh. It says, God says, I hate Esav. I hate him. Saneti. That's a word that's not used that often. And who's talking? This is Borei Olam. This is the father of all the children of the world. Of course, we're the Bechor, Beni Bechori Israel, but Hashem created the whole world. But he says, Esav Saneti, I hate Esav. Why? Not only Esav, I asked the rabbis, of course, not Esav, Gam Bene Esav. That's all the Goyim. Okay? I know maybe it's hard for some of you to hear that. Oh, they're my children, all that. No, no. You have to know what the Chazal is telling us. Why? Why is he hating them so much? And I'll give you one other idea from the Gemara. Gemara says, Har Sinai. And Rashi tells us right there, what do you mean, Har Sinai? Because Sinah, Sinah means hatred. Sinah came down from Hashem onto the Goyim. Not that we think that the Goyim hate the Yehudim. No. The Rashi tells us because the Sinah came from, why? From HaKadosh, but why? Because the Goyim rejected the Torah. So because they rejected the Torah, they had a chance to take it. So because that, the Sinah of Hashem, because they didn't grab the opportunity. So Hashem says, yeah, you rejected my Torah, I reject you. And again, we're saying it again because why is that? Because they should have been great. They had all the opportunities to become great. They weren't born from the Kana'anim. They're born from the Am HaKodesh. Esav was from the Am HaKodesh. And he was even great. Yishmael his mother was Hagar. But Yitzhak, Esav, his mother was Rivka. Rivka Ruach HaKodesh. She was a tzaddiket, unbelievable. So we have to see that and be aware about it. Esav Saneti and Baruch Hashem, we are Bnei Yaakov, Bnei Israel, and Ahavti Etchem, says there in the beginning after that. Ahavti Etchem, I love you. So you have to know that Hashem loves us and He protects us. Bezat Hashem, protecting us from what's going on now in the world. Now you have to know that Rivka knew that Yaakov was the chosen one, as we said earlier. Now, the question was, why didn't she tell Yitzhak? Well, we said because the purpose was given to her and not to the prophecy was given to her and not to Yitzhak. So the question is asked. We answer that question also as well. So we're learning another derech eretz over here at the end of the parasha. Way at the end of the parasha, a big piece of derech eretz that a lot of people might overlook. And it says at the end of the parasha, now it says, Vayishma Yaakov el avi ve'elimo. And Yaakov listened, there's that word again, Vayishma, Sarah shomat petach ha'ohel, and also Rivka shomat, everybody is listening, all the greats are listening, they're listeners, Shema Yisrael, Yisrael has to be a listener, and that's how you become great. You listen, and you learn, and then you do. But first you got to listen. You listen to your elders. So over here, Yaakov Avinu wasn't a baby. He was 60 years old, I believe, at the time when he left the house of his mother and father. And he was a accomplished man. And he learned for many, many years. He learned, as we said, on the lap of Abraham Avinu. He learned with Yitzhak Avinu. And yet, he could have said, I know what I'm doing. I don't have to listen to mommy and daddy anymore. That's like we learned today that at the time of the Chebleh Mashiach, the children aren't listening to their parents anymore. They reject, they have a chutzpah. They think they know better. I don't got to listen to mommy and daddy. They're telling me what to do. Who are you telling me what to do? Especially single children, you know? Married children, you know, married with kids, maybe the parents shouldn't tell them too much what to do anyway. But a single child, 15, 16, 18, 20, they're living under the roof of their parents. The parents they're telling them what's best for them. But the kid thinks he's smarter than the parent. So they answer abruptly. They don't listen to their mom and dad. They tell their mom and dad, I'm going to do this anyway. Oh, so that's chutzpah. And that's one of the signs of Chevle Mashiach, that we're in the time of the Mashiach. Bezat Hashem, we should come fast because things are happening very, very quickly these days. Look how things are unraveling. Things are unraveling. All the stabbings in Eretz Yisrael. Our brothers should be protected. All the crazy things that are going on in the world. The bombing the other day. Bombing like crazy. Bombing people. The Hashem is unleashing all these things in order to gain our attention. At least that. There's Midat Adin out there as well. We don't have to say no. We can't say no. We have to say yes. Not for no reason. Midat Adin out there. But the main Midas, Hashem wants us to come back, make Teshuvah, and He always has the door open. He loves us, as we said before. And And we can't walk around just saying Hashem is rough, Hashem is midah. No, that's you failed the test. If you just feel like that, then you missed out. You missed the test. That's a miss. So over here we're learning the Derech Eretz from Yaakov Avinu, to listen to your mother and father. You have to listen. You have to be a listener. And that's what that's what Yaakov is teaching us over here. And the last lesson I just want to tell you about is like this. The lesson of Nose Be'ol Chavero. This is a great midah. This is a midah gedolah. This is a fantastic character trait. This is the midah that made Moshe Rabbeinu Moshe Rabbeinu. It also made even Yosef was Nose Be'ol. I don't know but he was concerned with the people that he was in jail with. He had a compassion for them. It was a concern. And we have to be Nosel Be'ol Chaverenu, our brothers and sisters. That's number one. Forget Chaver, that's our brothers and sisters. Our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael are suffering. They are being terrorized. They're being terrorized by savages, by these Arabs, Yimach Shemam. Now, you could say all you want, Yimach Shemam, but what are we going to do? What can we do for them? We could do Teshubah, Tefillah, Ma'asim Tobim, Tzedakah. We have to go out and try to increase these things, increase our Torah learning. That is what is pulling the strings in Shemayim. You could have all the guns, all the policemen, all the army you want. They're not going to, you know, they should, and we need all we can get, we need it. But that is not the answer to all the problems, because that's not going to be the answer over here. There's just too many Arabs. There are too many crazy people out there. Look what happened in France today. Has for Shalom, that could happen anywhere. We need to also be thankful to Hashem that it didn't happen here. That's the number one reaction. First, we got to thank Hashem, Baruch Hashem, it didn't happen over here. But you should think for a second, not too long, think for a second, how would we feel, how would we react really if something like that would happen closer to us? How would we feel today? What would we do today? Would we go to the movies today? Would we go to, I don't know, what would we do today? We would come to shul, the people that aren't coming to shul. What would we do today? Go to the rabbi, ask him what to do. But people say, oh, it's in France. It's not over here. We're safe over here. It's in America. Oh, okay. That's not the attitude. The right attitude is Bereshit, Bishpil Reshit, that the whole world is being run for Yehudim to take notice and to see that Hashem is running this world in order for us to have the proper reaction. And we see, where do we get that proper reaction from? We learn it from our parasha. We see, Ribka, Vayitratesu habanim bekirba, Vayelech lidrosh et Hashem. And she went to inquire of Hashem, the prophet, and our prophets, Eneha Edah. The Eneha Edah, those are the righteous people we have. The rabbis in our shuls, the rabbis in our schools, the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Miller always said, you know who you go to the rabbi, the best, the biggest rabbi, you got to go to the Rosh Yeshiva today. That is the Eneha Edah. And we should all think about that today. And we should try to think about our brothers and sisters in Israel. And we should try to do some act of chesed today. Learn a little extra Torah. Come to shul 15 minutes early today and open up a sefer, any kind of sefer. Maybe read some Tehillim to show Hashem that this is a message for me and it's not going to pass over my head. And I want to thank, count your fingers, count your toes today, because there's some people there in France that don't have any fingers and they don't have any toes. They're gone. But Baruch Hashem, we're still here. Have a good day. Bye.